Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. My guest today enlisted in the U.S. Army following the terror attacks of September 11th. Following military service, he worked for a number of years as a first responder, striving to prevent child exploitation in the form of human trafficking. He also performed conflict resolution and crisis negotiation. He recently co-authored Get Up, The Art of Perseverance with Adam Greenberg, a former Major League Baseball player. Together, they share the powerful story of how Greenberg made it through the pain and struggle resulting from being struck in the head by a 92-mile-an-hour fastball. It is a fascinating story of overcoming the odds. Together, they share how some of the life's most painful moments can become some of the most positive and most powerful. Today, he is the host of the Get Up Nation podcast, where he continues to help transform the effects of trauma into power bases of positive change, recovery, and empowerment. His name is Ben Biddick, and I hope that you love meeting him as much as I did. I found his passion to be contagious and inspiring. By the way, you may notice that there might be some audio glitches in the interview, but the message was so powerful that we had to publish the episode. I hope that you loved Ben's passion as much as I did. All right, so Ben, thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's an honor to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh man, I've been looking forward to this. You know, you've got a cool, interesting background, and I thought maybe we could start there.
Sure. Yeah. So I've done a number of different things in my life, and largely, you know, at an early age, pretty much came to the understanding that some of the, yeah, I guess what I viewed as success or what I thought of living a successful life would largely be focused on people, right? So not necessarily making a gazillion dollars. Not necessarily, you know, some of the options that we often think of when we think of success. When I think of success, I think of, you know, when my time on earth is done or this chapter is over, that I look back and I think of all the times that I had with people and like moments like this. Like, this is great. We've been able to connect here, and you have an amazing story, and I love your format here and your podcast and what you're doing for people. And so I just, you know, I early on figured out that people is where it's at. So I just sought to serve. I had a ton of different interests when I was young, and it was hard for me to just jump into one career path and be happy with that. I was kind of, I don't know if it was ADD or what it was, but I was super interested in basically everything. So then I just, you know, I said, if I don't exactly know what I want to do, well, why don't I just serve people and I'll figure out what is pleasing to me to do.
Yeah,
because in the process of serving other people, you learn so much about people and you learn so much about yourself as well. So I figured a good use of my time while I was still having questions and about what I would do was to just start serving. And so just did that. When I was in college, they got to, I was doing a writing program, and at the end of it, you know, they said, all right, now your final project is to write a book. And I was, you know, 20 wow. years old or something. And what do I know about anything to write a book about, you know, life? Like, what am I going to write about?
Right.
Whatever I write is going to be so ridiculous. It was just like, I need to go out and experience some things first and before I have something to say. And so I just went around, traveled, worked odd jobs, worked all over. 9/11 happened. My brother worked in a building across from one of the trade towers. He survived that day and everything, but it was definitely, you know, that call in the morning and say, turn your TV on.
Wow.
I'm okay. And so that kind of oriented me. I'd always considered military service as a possibility, but wasn't quite sure. And so at that point, I was like, well, that's something that is important. And I want to make the world a safer place. And I don't want these awful things happening, you know, in our buildings and our soil. So volunteered, was a medic in the Army, did all sorts of jobs in the Army, basically, again, super interested in everything. So when they offered training, send me, I'll go. So I did all sorts of different things in the military. And then outside of that, I worked and then transitioning back into civilian life. I worked in a number of different environments, crisis workers, so helping people who were suicidal or homicidal, a SWAT and hostage negotiator, worked to try to prevent human trafficking with some populations in the Midwest. Yeah. So, and just trying to take young people who are, you know, at risk of being exploited and trying to guide them into something that where they may have had a lot of dysfunction earlier in their life, a lot of trauma, a lot of poverty, things like that, trying to transition them into something healthy instead of being exploited. So just basically, you know, that's been largely as it built up to most recently where, and I don't want to take too much time on this, but basically I kind of realized that after all of this service and seeing how people suffer and seeing what builds them up, seeing what destroys them. And so as I kind of processed all of that, I did find something that I wanted to write about, and that was resilience. The topic of resilience was something after dealing with so many populations that were suffering, that was probably the most important character trait or component of a personality to help people get through these challenging times. So that was the biggest gift I figured that I could give to the world. And so I began writing about it, wrote a book with Adam Greenberg, a former Major League Baseball player, was hit in the head with a pitch at the first plate appearance of his major league at bat. He basically, Dusty Baker sent him into the game to pinch hit. And it was the first pitch he ever saw in the major leagues, hit him on the head under the helmet, caused a bunch of damage to his balance, his vision, and, you know, those delicate bones inside the ear.
Yeah.
That amount of impact. It was a 92 mile an hour fastball that drilled him direct. Didn't hit the helmet, just hit him straight on the back of the head. So he had a tremendous experience. And really a fairy tale story that is just hard to believe of all the amazing people who stepped in to get him a full at bat in the major league 7 years later after working in the minor leagues to try to get back to the big leagues.
That's an
amazing story of resilience. He does all sorts of talks right now to help kids who have had head injuries, and he does amazing things for people to really give them hope as they're facing their challenges. And so that created my podcast, the Get Up Nation podcast. Basically, you know, it's get up. How do we get up from difficult times and get through adversity? Like you well know with your unyielded stuff. But
kindred spirits so I
created
there.
That podcast. And absolutely. Yeah.
Wow.
That's my summary so far of this life of what I've been involved in and what I've been up to. So,
yeah. And I love that, Ben. And I love the focus on service, you know, the focus on people. And you said something like you really started looking at, because you've seen a lot and you've seen a lot with other people and their journeys. You said something about what really builds them up. Could you speak to that a little bit more?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. So one of the things that's near and dear to my heart is people who are just overwhelmed by life, who have a history of trauma or poverty or addiction, and they're just going through it. You know, we're really becoming aware as we look around what's happening in the world today and dealing with the pandemic and all of the mental health challenges that come from that. It really challenges some of our paradigms of thought, what it means to be, I guess, strong, or what it means to be someone who can be a leader in an effective way that cares about people. And so, you know, a lot of messages, especially, you know, for the masculine concepts that are put out there of just rugged, you got to be tough enough. You have to just suck it up and just drive on and quit complaining and let's not deal with all your feelings, et cetera, et cetera. Well, that's just leading to people committing suicide left and right. And it's really a narrative that needs to change and is changing because, you know, as we deal with COVID-19 and financial challenges and political unrest and all of these things, we really need to find some solid ground to find something that grounds us and unites us. And that's a key component of resilience, that unity is that ability to be clear, vulnerable, and open and authentic about our feelings, thoughts, and emotions. You know, it's It is absolutely something that is true strength for men and women to be able to articulate, I am having an awful day. I am dealing with a lot and I just need some time to process this. And that leads to people, then it just opens the door to that resilience, because if it's in an environment where people know how to treat each other with kindness and compassion, then we strengthen one another. We give each other room to breathe. We help each other and hold each other accountable to practice self-care and not get caught up in, especially in, you know, entrepreneurial circles and high performer, master performer circles where people are doing 78 tasks every minute of every day and, you know, trying to take on the world, and, you know, the quality starts to go down because we can't, it's almost inhuman. You know, it's not something that our spirits, bodies, minds can thrive under. So it's something that's really profound as far as resilience goes, as far as from my perspective and what I've seen, is for people who are overwhelmed to find that safe space to be able to articulate their thoughts and emotions. Like yesterday, I was talking with the young man, suicidal thoughts, totally overwhelmed. He had had lots of people in his life. You know, he'd had 3-4 deaths before he was even 16 of people that were close to him, seeing some things in his home that were frightening from adults that were there, et cetera, et cetera. And this young man, you know, is just having a hard time processing all that. Like at this, and with the pandemic, like algebra is not the priority right now. The priority is, you know, we can get to, like, you know, whatever class you have later. Right now, we need to work on the fact that you have value. You are cared about. We had, you know, family members encircle him and people in the community that were, you know, wanting to reach out to help him. And we just banded together, listened with non-judgment, just helped him process those thoughts and emotions. And when we're in that amount of pain, then, and we're able to release that, then we have that relief, you know. And oftentimes when we don't have that relief, or we don't have that unity and solidarity, then we just get mounted up with pain and our minds just go to the, how can I resolve this pain? And unfortunately, for so many, it's frequently, especially people, you know, who have been in violent environments in the past, you know, it just, their mind goes straight to, well, I could end this pain and this is how, and it would be permanent. And what a tragedy. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's what we believe. Yeah. It's like an out, you know, and it's a legitimate option, right? It is. Mm-hmm. But man, if we could just drop back and have a place where that person can articulate all those thoughts and emotions, not be judged for it, be welcomed for it, be encouraged for it. And just shown with the listening, you don't even have to tell them anything. You can just listen. You know, you don't even have to, you're not there to solve their problems. If they knew how to solve their problems, they would solve it, right?
That's right.
Sometimes it's just listening and letting them emote, letting them get it out.
Yeah. Without the judgment. I think that's really powerful.
It's just, you know, so, yeah, yeah, yeah. Cause it's, you know, we have a lot of expectations and things like that, but, you know, for people who are overwhelmed and not able to meet the, you know, there could be excessive expectations. And young people, especially, or young people, or people who have never thought about emotional intelligence or taken mm-hmm. the time to really be introspective and think about their mental health. You know, if they've been given these messages of, you just have to be tough and quit whining and that basically leads to substance use. It basically, you know, we get to this spot within ourselves that we have this unbearable, you know, energy that's within us. We can't deal with it effectively. So it spills out and then relationships start to, you know, wind down or fray. And then, you know, substance becomes a comforting way. People self-medicate with different substances. And then it's just, it can be a very downward and vicious cycle. But if we just had, like you were saying, that environment of non-judgment, chances are, if you're going through something, there's probably some other people who are too. So you're not alone. You don't need to isolate, and let's just get through it together and let's go have fun after. You know,
that's right.
We can get through this. It's not, you know, this person is not, they may feel like they're the only person on the planet who has this problem because they're feeling it and they may not know how to deal with it. So it might be really troubling, but if we can articulate to them, you know, I'm sorry, one of my lights went out there, but
that's okay.
We can articulate to them, look, this is a common thing that human beings experience and it's okay. Like, and that leads to some powerful outcomes where people really find a sense of relief and they don't take those steps toward suicide or through negative behaviors that only destroy them.
Right, right. And, you know, when you said that thing, that unity between vulnerability and being authentic, you know, and that goes along with, though, the non-judgment. Because if you know that you're being judged, are you going to be vulnerable? Yeah. No. Why would you?
Right.
You know, because I think that this was something my husband and I were talking about this years ago. And he said that he thought that vulnerability was a manifestation of trust. So if there's no trust, why would you ever be vulnerable? You know, so I think the non-judgment, so when you said that you really listened with non-judgment, How do you put yourself in that space where you can just listen, not to solve, not to judge, you know, but just to listen to understand? What do you do?
I think it largely comes out of times where I've tried to solve people's problems and failed at it miserably and actually worsened, you know, them. And so it's just, you know, it's largely just a thing of, I have gotten to a point where I really, you know, mindfulness is important to me. And I've really gotten to a point where I never know what's going to happen any day. I don't know who I'm going to be encountering. I don't know who I'll talk to. Amazing things happen every day, right? And it is, you know, they say they've run the science or the probability and statistics on how the probability of human beings being alive, and not just human beings being alive, but being aware of being alive. And I just meditate on that sometimes. I just, you know, they say it's something like 400 trillion to one. And I just try to focus every day on, every day is truly a gift. I don't know what this all is. I don't know anything. All I know is that I'm going to encounter people today. Those are the most important interactions and places where I can do the most good for people, is largely just to be there and experience people. And whether they're happy, whether they're sad, whether they're frustrated, mad, whatever it is, we're all encountering each other. And if we focused on the people in our lives instead of a lot of the things that we focus on, there would be a ton of societal change pretty rapidly, I think. And we might have a much more satisfying life experience to have that when we stop playing those games of trying to impress other people. And we just kind of get to the point of like, we're human beings. It's a pandemic.
Yeah.
We're trying to help our kids learn. We're trying to get through this. We are seeing some of the most heroic acts of heroism from our frontline workers who go to work every day and do this work and go home to families that they pray they don't, you know, bring the disease home to of COVID-19. Yeah. You know, we see heroism. We also see some of the most, you know, when people are under stress, sometimes we react in really negative ways. We let the stress take us into really, you know, violent behavior or, you know, just inappropriate or disturbing, you know, moral behavior as people try to navigate stress and think they need to overpower something or be a certain way. But the way I just kind of look at it is, you know, I just kind of look at it like, we all know that this is a, whatever this is, we have a short amount of time here. And so to make it count, I just want to be somebody of compassion. And I just have learned over time from listening to people who have been through some of those awful things people can go through, that first of all, I don't have any answers. I wish all these things didn't happen and would not happen. And I work to prevent that from happening in various ways. But at the same time, when painful things do happen, I also know that the qualities that people have within them are really, it becomes an opportunity to express and embody some of the most noble characteristics of human beings as a result of whatever they're dealing with. So whether it's somebody who's been trafficked, whether it's somebody who's dealt with addiction for years and years and years, whether it's somebody who was abused as a child and is just coming to grips with how this has impacted their life at age 34.
That's right.
You know, it's just something where to be kind and to listen, that itself is medicine, is what I've learned. You know, we could try to fix it all day long, but first we need to listen so that we communicate that concern, that empathy, that respect for the person that forges the trust you're talking about.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to trust us when they're in a hospital bed and have just been sexually assaulted. They're not going to trust us if we walk in that room and just start telling them what they need to do to get over this. Like, that's offensive. Yeah. You're not going to have trust if you're trying to serve people in that way. But to generate that trust, you allow them to be exactly what they are without judgment, knowing that they're probably embodying these characteristics and behaviors. As a result, they're doing their best to deal with probably some pretty horrific things. And so, you know, when you have horrific things happen to you, you don't just come out smiling and happy and skipping along. Like, there's going to be some challenges. So just to pour out that empathy, to build that place of trust, and then it's the unity and that resilience that's born of that, because they will always know in that moment they didn't have somebody marching in, making their problems worse. They had a warm, sacred shore to just dry out on, to just feel the sun on their skin again, recognize that the past is done. We're here now. And what do we do from this point forward? So I agree with you 100%. Trust the vulnerability and just putting aside all the things of, let's not just try to impress people or be something that we're not. Like, you're amazing enough just being who you are. And it would be good for us all to get to that place if we could practice that daily of just realizing how miraculous we are and how we don't need to have $74,000 every day. Necessarily, we don't necessarily need to the perfect, you know, physique. I mean, exercise is important and finances are important, but if we're doing these things in a way that we're trying to earn people's respect, or there's something empty within us that we're trying to fill with these things, they never will. And so there's certainly nothing wrong with having money and resources, because you can do amazing things with those things for, you know, in the world. And, you know, certainly it's important to be, you know, to exercise and be healthy and things like that. But it's a different concept when we're just trying to fill an empty hole within us with things instead of realizing, you know.
Yeah. No, and you said a lot of good things in there too, Ben. When you said the compassion and the empathy, I mean, those are huge. I was looking at something today. It was on LinkedIn, and it was some kind of conversation. I don't remember who started it, but a comment was made something like, you know, sometimes you have to take a step back and realize that your worst day that you think is the most challenging day could be someone else's dream day, you know, and it kind of puts it in perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
But to be empathetic, you know, that's huge. So you wrote this book, you have, and you know, a huge focus on resilience, and then your podcast. What are some of those things that you've, I guess, learned about resilience in terms of maybe how people build it, mm-hmm. or what leads to it?
Right. One thing that I've learned that's really powerful is, you know, we have something awful happen to us. Like, for instance, Adam Greenberg, he worked his entire life to get to the major leagues. He worked his entire life. He would every day of his life, without question, he would do 300 bat swings every day, no matter where he was, whether they're on vacation, whether they're, you know, at a family event every day. And his brothers were so impressed by him. His work ethic was just unparalleled. It was like raining. It was like a thunderstorm outside. And they're like, where is Adam? And he was actually out in the family pool. He was swinging the bat under the water to try to increase his strength and, you know, to increase his bat speed.
Wow.
And they're like, dude, it's stormy out. And he was just so focused. No, I got to get better at baseball. And they're like, no, you know, they were,
let's not get struck by lightning.
right. But it just showed like his work ethic, you know? And so he just did all of this. And then, you know, it was the pinnacle of his life. He stepped into the batter's box of the major league game, his first game ever in the major leagues. There's only 18, you know, something like 18,000 people who have ever played major league baseball in the history of the world. And he was one of them in that moment. And he stepped in again and waited for that first pitch. And, you know, less than half of a second, he was on the ground holding his head, you know, thinking that he was about to die. He was basically saying, stay alive, stay alive, stay alive inside of his head, because he thought his head had actually come. He thought that in that moment of trauma that he thought he was holding his head together, that wasn't the case, but it was what he perceived in that moment, because he had just been hit by a 92 mile an hour fastball. But if you think of the height of the triumph of that moment, and then all of a sudden the absolute like drop out of, all of a sudden you're on the ground, and then to slowly start to realize, this was before concussion protocols in Major League Baseball. So they didn't even take him to the hospital. He could have died from a brain bleed there, but at the time they didn't even take him to the hospital. So they were just like, you good? And he's like, yeah, I'm, you know, he's just trying to, you know, I can do
shake
this
it more. Off.
And, yeah. And it, you know, it was so difficult because he couldn't, because it was so damaging, you know, and it was like, and migraines and balance issues. And if you don't make numbers in your major league career, like now, then you're gone. So to speak to your point, you know, we have these situations, we may not necessarily be in major leagues and have that type of experience, but we have moments in our lives that are triumphs for us. And we go out there and have, you know, these amazing experiences where life is just amazing. But we also have these experiences where the rug gets pulled out from under us, right? We lose our job because of COVID-19, or we get diagnosed with cancer, or we get, you know, an injury that happens where we can no longer work in the capacity that we used to. Everybody experiences adversity in some form. So what I use the American Psychological Association's definition of resilience, which is basically, you know, adapting well to trauma, tragedy, threats, significant sources of stress, and overcoming these challenges to thrive, basically is the way that I look at it, and the way that, I mean, there's a number of different definitions, but that's what I kind of focus on. So largely when people experience this, at first there's that wallop of, oh my goodness, what happened? And then, oh my goodness, you know, they're in a hospital bed and they can't move their legs, or whatever, that, you know, or they're getting chemotherapy and they never anticipated this, and you know, it wasn't in their plan, you know. And so in those moments, as we start to navigate those stresses, we start to get accustomed to our new normal. We start to look for resources. We grapple with the feelings and the emotions that come along with that, you know, the coming to the point of accepting that. And certain people have certain traits where they're able to get to acceptance quicker. It all depends on the how intimate the pain is and how deep and far reaching the pain is, you know, what sort of control, protective factors they have in their life versus, you know, if it's somebody who has a strong family who's there for them and financially, you know, robust, that's one experience. But then there's also an experience where somebody doesn't have a family and doesn't have much as far as resources. They have a different, you know, there's less protective factors there to help people overcome the challenge. But, but at the same time, sometimes people who have had a rougher life are more accustomed to, okay, I don't necessarily get my way all that often. So I'm used to hustling. I'm used to going out there and doing what I got to do. And this is just another challenge, and I'm going to get up and handle this and move forward.
Yeah.
There are different levels of experience that people have where they're kind of, where when something awful happens or outside of their plan happens, it's a drawing into themselves to say, okay, how am I? And I have a choice to make at that point. Am I going to let this own me? Am I going to just let myself spiral into that deep, dark place? Or, you know, and sometimes we don't even have a choice. We just don't know what to do. And we're so overwhelmed that we just go there. And it's not necessarily even a choice. It's just our best effort to try to deal with it. But over time, we start to realize this, okay, if I don't take action, if I don't take a proactive action, if I don't move towards acceptance, or I don't learn something from this, or find the silver lining, or find other people who have been through this experience and hear their insights into overcoming it, or what their challenges were, you know, to be proactive about how this moment of adversity, or this experience of adversity, or this years long saga of frustration and agony, how can that actually make me more powerful than I've ever been? And so when we talk with people like you, with your being unyielded, you know, of saying, well, I will not yield to, you know, this, and I am going to get up and keep going, and I'm going to go after it. And the learning that comes from that, and then the empowerment that you start to realize, oh my goodness. And you talk with some people who will actually tell you, who have really progressed through this process, they'll tell you that they're like, some people will say, I am super thankful that I have cystic fibrosis. Because if I did not have this, I would not have been able to do this in my life. And some of the guests on my show and certainly the guests that you have on your show are, you know, probably have similar experiences where they decide, you know, this thing that happened to me, I'm not going to allow this to, like, this is not my identity. I'm bigger than this. And there's more out there. And I am going to take this thing that's happened, learn and grow and develop from it. And actually, it's only going to make me better. And so then, you know, when people get that message, really, it's like that light goes off and they're like, wait a second, you know how many people I could help because of what I've been through? And when I started sharing my heart with this, how impacted the people were, and they wanted to talk with me more, you know, people start to recognize, oh my goodness, well, this thing that I thought was so awful initially, it might've been something that's actually, you know, making my life actually deeper, richer, and more exceptional than I would have conceived without it.
Right.
I mean, did you come to that too? Your guess?
Completely. And you know what's funny about that, Ben? I've thought about this for myself because I've been through some things that, you know, there are parts of my childhood that was kind of rough, you know, and I've always thought like, I would not be the person I am now had I not gone through that. And to me, there are like hidden gifts within adversity. And it's funny though, because it's like, I would never wish it upon my worst enemy, but yet I'm grateful that I went through it, which is kind of weird, you know?
Yeah. But that's the thing. That's the sign of somebody who's really has a honed ability to be resilient is, you know, they would never, you know, they don't want that pain to be shared. And oftentimes what they'll do is work to prevent it, you know, and
that's right.
With their experience, and so like you were saying, exactly, you know, I don't want anybody to ever have to go through that again, but you know what, I'm going to make the most of what I went through so that other people don't. And then they do they have colossal impact because they have the lived experience. They're not just reciting things out of a book to somebody. Mm-mm. You've ate and breathed this, you know, this experience. And so your words go right to the quick. There isn't any, you know, beating around the bush. It's just straight to, all right, we're going to help you through this and we're going to get through it. And we're here for, you know, and then you just have effective action and impact because there's nothing in the way of that. It's just pure, like, it's gritty, it's raw, and it's service oriented, and it's a unifying force, and it's invigorating, you know,
yeah,
because you know you're stopping felt. And so that's a great feeling.
It is a great feeling, you know, and it's, I don't know, there's so much in there that I you know, that just kind of grabs my attention in terms of when you said, yeah, when you go through something like this, you get to the point where you think, okay, I'm going to be more powerful than I've ever been. And it's true, because it's, but that comes from something else you said, which was the learning. We have to go through the learning and the growth. And that's where we get, yeah, that place of empowerment. And I had someone on my show, it was, back in December, she's a multiple gunshot survivor and home invasion, you know, just neighbor went crazy, basically. And afterwards, she's like, okay, well, I have a choice here, because I am not going to let him and what he did affect me. And she's like, but at the same time, you know that it affects you. So then it's like, okay, it's going to affect me by making me better. And I thought, that's,
yes,
that's inspiring. And it takes work. You know, yes, it's not easy,
yes,
you know?
No. And that's the thing that I like about it. It's not like a motivational speaker speech that just pumps you up for 5 minutes. I mean, this is gritty, raw, you know, troubling stuff that doesn't just, like, you know, it just isn't like bad news that came and go in one, it comes and go and goes in one day. I mean, it involves, you know, I can't imagine the amount of therapy and physical therapy that a person has to, you know, had to go through after, you know, multiple gunshot wounds there, and having to deal with, you know, the trauma from that point on of, if all of a sudden somebody came in your house, and then when you go back to your house after that for the first time, and you think in your neighbors, and if it, especially if it's sudden and unforeseen, right? So that's the most, yeah, terrifying. That's like, you know, with post-traumatic stress disorder, largely it's that feeling of helplessness paired with the feeling of terror, right, or horror at something, yeah, just tremendously awful. So a sense of that helplessness, and then something terrifying happens. That's what just gets people to the deep with the post-traumatic stress. And so I can't imagine, you know, you're just in your house one day doing what you do, folding laundry, you know, cooking, whatever you're doing, homework, whatever you're doing. And then all of a sudden you're being attacked by somebody and shots are going off. And then the toll that comes from that later of, oh, next time you're doing laundry, you know, and you're trying to cope with everything and you have physical injuries, like those things rock people. That those things rock us to our core. And so the people that do the work to go on to thrive, it's absolutely heroic, because, like, you just think of what it takes for people to work through that. You know, that's, it's terrifying when it's completely unforeseen. You know, it's one, yeah, thing, soldiers going into battle, no, okay, there's a potential that, you know, certain things will happen. But if you're just in your home, you know, and it's just out of the blue like that, that's extra terrifying. And
yeah,
so to have people say, okay, this person or this situation had this effect on my life, but I have a choice to do what I have a choice of what to do with that. I can let that own me for the rest of my life. You know, or I can stand up and take an action to say, what could this create in me that could be good? Well, how many people have sharing your process of growth from that? How much light would that give to somebody who's terrified in a hospital bed after something like this just happened? How much solidarity is that for you to go in a room and to be able to, you know, listen to the suffering of somebody else who's going through the same things, and then provide them with the resources that were helpful for you, or to connect them with the help that they need? You know, that I think it would be a profound world if we just, like, literally, practically, in our lives, take stock of the adversity that we've had, focus on what that adversity is, learn the lessons of what created that thing from happening. And maybe we could have stopped it, maybe we couldn't, but understanding that and then saying, how can we prevent this from happening again? Do you imagine, can you imagine? And then to pair your experience with other survivors or other people's experiences of that, and have pockets of people who are just articulating for improvements or changes or awareness to increase. I mean, if we really focused on that, on overcoming the suffering, if we stopped, this is just my opinion, but if we, instead of putting forth a political agenda, just put forth a practical agenda that says, these are the things that cause great suffering in our society. What can we do to prevent or stop these things from happening? And let the people who have an intimate experience of this, along with an expertise of how these things happen and how people heal, man, can you imagine the amount of societal change that would happen rapidly, yeah, and the amount of unity and solidarity that would be there? That would be tremendous.
Yeah.
That's why I work like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, it is kind of, it's very powerful. God, something there you were saying, Ben, it kind of triggered a thought for me around, and I think it goes back to something you said earlier too. Well, a couple things, right? You go through something like that and it is work to get through it. And, you know, one of the things that's not helpful is a person who's like, just be a trooper, or just get over it. You know, it's like, okay, thank you very much. That's the direction I'm going, but there's some work that has to happen. And so there's that part. And then you said something about the caring for yourself, and there's something just what you were saying there, like that self-care piece. Can you, and I know we talked about that when I was a guest on your show a little bit too, but can you speak to that a little bit and why you think it's so important?
Mm-hmm. I think we're seeing the thought leaders in our current, you know, the current consciousness of our world, where we're really learning that, you know, whereas a lot of people, when we take care of ourselves, a lot of people maybe are troubled by that, seeing it as something that's arrogant, possibly.
That, you selfish. Know,
I'm time out, or it's selfish, or it's weak, right? Like,
yeah,
I'm overwhelmed by something. I need to take some time and I need to just process this. Okay. Now, if it's just, I mean, if these are things as we become more aware and emotionally intelligent and more aware that in order to have healthy relationships, like we are, like the, it's relationships that people are having a lot of trouble with consistent, committed relationships over, you know, a period of time. There's so much change, there's so much stress. And so if we can really focus with our relationship with ourself to really say, I have value. And if I extend the kindness and the compassion to myself that I'm probably pretty skilled at doing for others. Like, there's a lot of people who, you know them in your community. They show up at every event. They're there helping out. They give money to the people who need it. They bring you, you know, food when your family member's in the hospital. You know, there's these selfless people who are really good at doing good for others. But there's this block to a certain degree where people are saying that I shouldn't be good to myself, though. You know,
yeah.
Kind of, and especially maybe in some of the more, you know, it's this sacrifice, like what, like it's kind of like, I guess in prior generations, you know, it's the greatest generation. Largely, they had to fight Hitler and they had to fight this global fascist regime that's coming their way. And they did have to sacrifice great amounts of time, effort, and energy. And they did have to make amazing sacrifices, and they should be honored and respected for those. But over time, we're learning that, you know, when we sacrifice and sacrifice and sacrifice and sacrifice, you just look at, you know, military members, the high rate of suicide, it is oftentimes because we are sacrificing, sacrificing, sacrificing. We say no to all self-care. We say, I'm doing good for others, and it's okay if I totally burn myself out because I'm doing it for others. And it's not okay. It's not okay because you matter just as much as they do.
That's
so
right.
For ourselves, it's a, you know, it's extra insidious when we do this to ourselves to say, no, it's not arrogant to get the rest that I need, to eat healthy foods, to exercise, to take a moment to myself each morning. And in fact, when you take care of yourself in that way, how much then does your relationship flourish? Because you have, your cup is full. And
that's
so you're
right.
you're able to give in a way where you're able to give, and it's not just out of the sacrificial sense of duty. It's a joy to do it, right? Because it's part
right.
of, it's part of your energy. It's a part of you living your fullest life. It's part of you thriving, and it becomes infectious, right? So then relationships thrive. And so there's this balance that as we deal with stress and as we deal with challenges, there is a certain time for sacrifice. There is a certain time to set aside our own needs and take action, right? There's certain times for that. But there is a great, you can't do that over extended periods of time. People are learning this, that, you know, the when we're under stress, the cortisol increases in our body. We have chronic stress. We're in this hypersensitive, this hypervigilance. We get burned out and we need rest. And so like this gung-ho thing of I'm going to be an ER doctor and I'm going to stay up for 48 hours straight and I'm going to do all this stuff for everybody. And I'm going to see 18 clients instead of just six. And I'm going to do da 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 da. It's like, that's great that you want to do such great good. But you can't neglect yourself in that process, because if you want that good to be sustainable over time, and if you don't want to burn out in a year, then you need to learn to have that relationship with yourself.
Yeah. First. And treat
and
yourself
I think
well. Yeah.
Yes. And there's nothing. Yeah.
You know, you said a minute ago, like that's what fills your cup, right? And my first guest, who's also, he's a very dear friend of mine. John Square, he was in the North Tower on September 11th. And he talks about it this way. You can't pour from an empty cup. You know, so if we don't take care of ourselves, we've got nothing left. you know, so we can't do the good. Yeah. So I had a coach say to me once, Ben, this was years and years ago, and I wasn't really taking care of myself very well. Plus, the things I'd say to myself were not kind. She said to me, she's like, would you talk to anybody the way you talk to yourself? And I'm like, no, because that'd be mean. And she's like, then why are you doing it? I'm like, oh, good point. So this has been great. So I have just a couple more questions for you. One is, what is a piece of advice that you would have loved to have been able to give your younger self?
Yeah, I think it's right in line with what we're talking about here is it's great that you want to do good, but don't neglect yourself in the process. And there's nothing wrong with being kind to yourself. And so, you know, a lot of that, a lot of the trouble I had in making a decision about what I wanted to do, you know, was largely because of a neglect of my own, you know, personal needs. And largely, so it was great to do service for other people and to learn these lessons and things. But what the, one of the most vital lessons that I've learned after throwing myself into all of these environments is exactly what we're talking about here is that, you know, if you want to do good for people, you need to be able to be good to yourself.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's the most humble thing of all. It's more humble than going out there and making a big show of yourself to help everybody else, but you hate yourself within, or you're just trying to hide pain, and that your actual acts of service to others are actually acts of just self-hatred because you don't think you're worth it, or you're dealing with trauma responses from childhood, from abuse or neglect, or you're just, and or if it's not that severe, and you're just being cruel to yourself in your head, you know, because you're just trying to be better. Well, regardless of how deep or severe or anything like that, I would have to say, like what we were talking about here is just find ways for that self-care, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Don't buy into the messages we hear that, you know, it's selfish or that there's no time for it or to buck up. That's great. Now, where can people learn more about you, your book and your podcast and the work that you're doing?
Well, I'd be honored for people to check out getupnation.com. You can go there. That's where you can get all sorts of different things for me. I have a bunch of content on there that will help you develop resilience. It's everything's free. If you want to take it to the next level and do a premium subscription for $25 a month, you get access to a bunch of exclusive content. You get to see it all first, but you don't need to do that. And there's a ton of free content on there. There's free meditations from Jenny Lee. She's amazing. There is amazing leadership lessons on there. Speaking with a former Navy SEAL and the leader of the Trident Approach, Diego Ugalde, who works with teams in business and takes lessons from Navy SEAL service into, you know, the corporate world and helps people really learn teamwork and cohesion as they face challenges. All the episodes from the podcast, you can get the book, Get Up, The Art of Perseverance. And that's one of the unique, if you like baseball, that's one of the most unique stories in the history of baseball. So if you want to get an inside look of what Adam experienced, you can get a copy of that book. There's also the audio book available. But if you go to getupnation.com, plenty of stuff for you to check out.
Yeah. Yeah. And Adam's story is amazing. 6 years, right? It was 6 years to get back.
Yeah. I think ultimately it wound up being about six or seven. Wow. Yeah. Where he got a major league at bat. If you go on YouTube, I encourage people to look up Adam Greenberg at bat. He was on the Today Show, and the leader of the Miami Marlins gave him a one-day contract. He came out, he faced in an Aerosmith's Dream On, was pumping through the stadium as he went to take the plate. He got his official at bat. I get chills every time I think of it. So I encourage people to learn more about it. It'll help you be resilient.
Yeah. I just got choked up listening to you talk about it. Oh man, that is awesome. Well, hey, I just want to thank you so much for taking time to be with us and share some of the wisdom that you've learned. And this has truly been an honor to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here. And it was an honor to have you on my show. Love your work. I'm a huge fan. So just an honor to be here with you. And anybody listening, just encourage you to, you know, whatever you're facing, you can get through it. Let's get through it together.
That's right. That's what it's all about. Here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, the past is over. We are here now. So what's next? And it's not that we forget the past, because we don't, but life happens in the present. So some questions to ask ourselves might be, what did we learn? What do we want now? What are we doing to live right now? Second insight, to help others cultivate resilience, Ben shared some steps that we can take. One, acknowledge that they're doing the best that they can do right now. Honor their part of the journey. Two, show concern. Three, be empathetic. Four, and this is a powerful one, listen without judgment. We judge ourselves enough when we're just that person who can show up in that moment and we can really listen without judgment. It's powerful and it creates an incredible bond between two people. Next, at a point, we can help them harvest the gifts from adversity. What did we learn? What strength did we gain from the challenging experience? And of course, we don't rush that, right? It has to emerge at the right moment. And then finally, we can help them explore the power of choice. My third insight is all around self-care, rest, healthy food, time for yourself. I think about it this way, giving myself the grace and margin to make it through. You need to make sure that your cup is full, which is a huge part of thriving, because we've heard it before and we'll hear it again, but you cannot pour from an empty cup. When we care for ourselves, we have an infectious energy and our relationships are better. And remember, be kind to ourselves. Thank you so much for tuning in to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What, where we are committed to sharing ideas and stories that will help us all live our lives our way.